This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A number of recent polls have shown a sharp division between the way African Americans and white Americans view U.S. involvement in the Gulf. While whites support the war by a ratio of 4-1, blacks are about evenly split. We'll be exploring the particular concerns of African Americans on the war from a number of perspectives today. My first guest, political science professor Diane Pinderhughes, documented the disproportionate representation of blacks in the military in the National Urban League's annual State of Black America report. Blacks make up 12% of the nation's civilian population, but close to 25% of the armed forces. When we spoke, Professor Pinderhughes said the high numbers of blacks in the military is a phenomenon that started when the draft ended.
With the removal of the draft, whites could choose not to join. Blacks could also choose not to join, but they didn't have the same range of choices in the private sector that whites had for employment, for advancement on the job, for equal pay. And so you began to have a situation in which you had a larger number of blacks choosing the military because that was more accessible. The private sector did not have the same range of choices, did not have the same rewards. And so you began to have a kind of pushing blacks out of the private sector. With the all-volunteer force, the military had to work harder at attracting people. And the military basically had a money that would support higher education, additional training. It had a guarantee of a job if you could gain access to it. And so you began to have a gradual increase in the proportions of blacks, not only entering, but re-enlisting, and for that matter, even surviving the first tour of duty. There's a much higher rate of survival on the part of blacks than whites. The individual who has graduated from high school is much more likely to survive in the military than one who has not. So you have 95% of blacks having graduated from high school and only 85% of whites having graduated from high school who entered the military.
So you're suggesting that the military is really used by a lot of blacks in the military as a job opportunity, as an opportunity that's lacking in the society at large.
Absolutely.
So is there a feeling of betrayal when the people in the military are actually asked to make the ultimate commitment, which is to go to war?
I think people feel angry that they're not a wider range of choices for the African-American population. And the difference in the choices means that blacks are much less likely to have the opportunities for participating in more lucrative, less lethal occupations than whites do. American policies in regards to employment in the private sector are much weaker, have been in existence for a much shorter period of time, and rather than being consistently applied, have gradually diminished in the federal government's commitment, at least, to implementation of affirmative action policies or even equal employment policies. And therefore, significant numbers end up in the military, and I suppose the word betrayal is not inappropriate under those circumstances.
What recommendations are you making?
Okay, well, mine is, for one, has to do with employment policy in the U.S. Affirmative action needs to be supported. The 1991 Civil Rights Act, depending upon how it's constructed, it's not in existence as far as I know at present, should be passed to the extent that it strengthens and reinforces policies that have been carried out before it but have been struck down by the Supreme Court dealing with affirmative action and minority set-asides. I would also, my article in particular, ask us to think about energy issues, educational issues, how we spend our money. We're willing to invest enormous amounts of money in equipment. We're willing to invest enormous amounts of money in personnel and in African-American personnel when they're involved in wars. We ought to be willing to invest in them when we are engaged in peace and also when people are in the private sector.
Diane Pinderhughes is a political science professor at the University of Illinois and the author of The Case of African Americans in the Persian Gulf, which is part of the National Urban League's annual report on the state of Black America. The proportionately high representation of African Americans in the Gulf is only one of the reasons that higher percentages of blacks than whites oppose the war. My next guest, Damu Smith, says there are many others. Smith is a co-founder of the African American Network Against U.S. Intervention in the Gulf. We spoke today about why he felt a separate African American anti-war group was necessary.
Well, first of all, because of the high sentiment of opposition within the African American community towards U.S. policy in the Gulf, we decided that it was necessary to form an organization specifically to organize that sentiment into a political force. Because while our interests coincide with all Americans who oppose U.S. policy in the Gulf, there are some special reasons that transcend those general reasons that pertain specifically to African Americans.
What are some of those special reasons?
Well, we are serving in the Gulf in disproportionate numbers. One of four people serving in the Gulf are black, and 30% of the Army's infantry forces are black, and 48% of the women in the armed services are black. And so we are the ones who will be dying first and the most, particularly when the ground war starts in this conflict. And the reason we are in the Army and the armed forces in general in disproportionate numbers is because of what we consider the racist poverty draft. That is, the fact, the circumstances that lead us to go into the military have to do with economic opportunities that we feel we can get in the military because of the lack of opportunities in the civilian sector. However, when we go into the military, especially under the Reagan, during the Reagan years and now under the Bush administration, we are finding that the most dramatic opportunities that we get are the opportunities to go to invade Grenada and invade Panama and go to Lebanon and be part of special forces in Nicaragua advising the Contras and go to El Salvador and advise the right-wing government there and now go to Saudi Arabia. Those are not the kinds of opportunities that African Americans have signed up for in the military, but that's the situation we find ourselves in, along with young whites who are also in the military. And we feel that none of these young people should be over there. This is a needless war. It's an unnecessary military confrontation, and we shouldn't be there.
I don't know if you're in a position to answer this or not, but I was wondering if you could give a sense of how you think the debate within white America and black America compares right now. And I don't know if you can use the example of your friends or different groups that you belong to or different factions within the peace movement?
Well, the polls have shown that the sentiment against the war is higher in the black community than it is among whites. And that's not because blacks are any less patriotic than whites, because history proves that we are just as patriotic as whites, because we are always the ones who are signing up to go in the military and to fight in America's wars abroad. But I think that this time around, in light of the Vietnam War debacle, black Americans are raising more questions in greater numbers than whites. I think the African Americans are saying they don't want their sons and daughters to die in a needless war. We have fundamental questions about the policy, and we don't think we ought to be there.
I think a lot of African Americans see Bush as being unsympathetic to civil rights, and I'm wondering if you think that has affected the stand of African Americans who oppose the war. On the war. In other words, does the opposition have anything to do with black perceptions of George Bush?
The fact that the administration vetoed the civil rights bill and has sought to deny and restrict scholarships for African American and other minority students certainly has dampened the enthusiasm by many African Americans for going off to fight in a distant land in a military conflict that is viewed as unnecessary. And I think that African Americans cannot have enthusiasm for going off to fight when we are being denied our civil rights and our human rights right here at home.
What do you see as being the economic issues of this war that most affect African Americans?
Well, this war is a very expensive conflict. We've heard estimates from $19 million an hour to $3 billion a day to $30 billion a month, depending on who you're talking to. But no matter where you hear the numbers from or who you hear the numbers from, the numbers are high. And this is going to have long-term and disastrous economic consequences on the African-American community because the billions of dollars that are being spent on this war are billions that cannot be available for daycare and child care and low- and moderate-income housing and decent health care facilities in our communities, and money available for scholarships and student loans. And so for all of the American population in general, this conflict will have those kind of negative economic consequences. And on top of that, you're talking about so many African-American breadwinners and income providers who are being taken away. You're talking about stabilizing forces within the African-American community who have been snatched away and been sent off. So taken all together, this war is going to have a devastating impact on the black community economically for all the reasons that I've given.
General Colin Powell is an African-American, and I think he's a great source of pride with two African-Americans. But on the other hand, I sense some ambivalence about him in this war. Could you talk about that?
Well, I think for many African-Americans, having Colin Powell head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff certainly is a source of pride because, after all, we have been denied opportunities in every aspect of American society in all of its institutions, and we've always known that we could do, we could lead, we could perform if we were given the opportunity. So I think in that sense, Colin Powell's position in the military has been a source of pride for many African Americans. On the other hand, it gives many African Americans no sense of pride about the fact that he is the one that is helping to implement the kind of foreign policy that our nation is pursuing abroad. Our military and foreign policy is interventionist, militarist, and racist in form and in content. And he is the one that has happened to, he is the chief military officer in the country that has happened to implement that policy. That is anathema to blacks who see the role of our country as one of trying to, what it ought to be is to defend democracy and support human rights.
During Vietnam, there were a lot of splits within families. Families split about, you know, being for war or against the war. And I'm wondering, with opposition to this war being what it is among African Americans, if you're starting to see that kind of problem too, of splits within families or splits between friends on where people stand on the war.
Well, we haven't encountered much of that. What we have encountered are people who are simply confused and ambivalent about their son or daughter's or relative's participation in the war. And this is one of the reasons why the African-American Network has been formed. We think it is so important for black Americans and other Americans to know why they are being sent off to fight in a conflict abroad. And they must have more reasons than the ones being provided by the administration. We want to be more probing, more analytical, more searching. We are finding that when we do that, people do begin to raise more questions, and actually people start questioning why we're there and move into a position of opposition to the war. Among other things, we point out the inconsistencies in U.S. policy. I mean, the U.S. has never mobilized the international community to impose comprehensive, mandatory, multilateral sanctions against the Republic of South Africa for its crimes against black people under apartheid, or for its 21-year illegal occupation of Namibia, or for its many years of occupying the southern territory of the People's Republic of Angola. We've never seen our government mobilize the international community to apply comprehensive multilateral sanctions against Israel for its mistreatment of the Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, nor to sanction Israel for its repeated invasions of Lebanon. I mean, there are inconsistencies in the policy, and when we tell African Americans and other Americans these things, they begin to say, oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. So why are we really there? And then we say the reason we're there is because of oil. It's not worth one American life. It's just not.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
All right. Listen, thank you so much.
Demo Smith is a co-founder of the African-American Network Against U.S. Intervention in the Gulf. Coming up, a talk with an African-American Muslim leader who supports the war. This is Fresh Air. The war in the Gulf has presented an unusual and difficult situation for African-American Muslims. For the first time, they and their leaders have had to wrestle with the question of whether Muslims in the American military should engage in fighting against Muslims in the Middle East. The holy book of the Islamic faith, the Quran, says that when a dispute arises between two Muslims, they must seek to make peace. How that aim should be accomplished has been the source of debate amongst Muslim religious leaders. In September, the International Islamic Conference met in Mecca to discuss this and resolved that it would be allowed to use force to get Iraq out of Kuwait because Saddam Hussein is a wrongful aggressor. A delegation returned to Saudi Arabia just before the war began and reaffirmed the position. Imam Muhammad Abdul Alim participated in both meetings. He's the leader of the West Oak Lane Mosque in Philadelphia. I asked him about the internal debate in the African-American Muslim community.
African-Americans, oftentimes, there's a lot of emotional, very strong emotional feelings toward this because we tend to speak a lot from hurt in terms of our relationship with America. So as a result, you had a lot of people initially, without any regards for the information or the details of the struggle, immediately sided with Saddam because it was sort of thing that anyone who is against America, they're for that person, right or wrong. But however, as Muslims, we are required to go to our holy book, which is the Quran, and look at how problems and conflicts are to be resolved. So as we got a more informed opinion, then you begin to see a shifting in the position of the African-American Muslim community.
You are the leader of a mosque in Philadelphia.
Yes.
What kinds of concerns are people bringing to you now from the mosque?
Well, basically, what we have several types. One is that, based on our position, is that we support the position of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in terms of its calling in armed American forces. There are some members of the community who take the position that we should not have supported that because they don't feel that we should have non-Muslim forces in Arabia. All right, that's one area of concern. Another area of concern is since the troops are there, should we support the American government in its having the troops there? This is a very hotly debated issue because Muslims hate the idea of Muslims fighting Muslims and Muslims fighting Muslims with non-Muslims on the side of one Muslim group. So these are some of the concerns.
Do you know of any African-American Muslims who are in the military or who have loved ones in the military, people
yes.
who you work with?
Yes.
And what are their concerns?
Well, their concern was, in fact, it's interesting. Now, we went to Saudi Arabia, in fact, on the 14th of this month, just before the war started. And our initial, one of our initial purposes were going to give moral support to the almost between 600 to 1,000 Muslim troops that are in the armed forces, especially in the ground forces among our African-American people, because they had concern that it was expressed in terms of fighting Muslims, and the whole idea of fighting Muslims and fighting during the month of Ramadan if war had broken out. But as we know, it did break out. And when we have been very, very clear from the Quran that it is permissible for them to fight both during Ramadan, and it's permissible for them to fight against an aggressor, even though that aggressor claims to be Muslim.
A lot of African-American Muslims have converted in their lifetime as opposed to being born into the religion, and I think that there's probably a lot of African-American families in which the family has some members who are Christians and mm-hmm. some members who are Muslims, mm-hmm. and I wonder what effect you've seen that having on families now during wartime.
Even before the war, the idea of the inner religious families require on the part of Muslims to be more considerate of the fact that they are the ones that have changed and not their families. And so even before this war started, the Muslims who are members of households that are Christian have been challenged to show the rational and well-meaning side of Islam. For instance, you hear a lot of times the word jihad, holy war. If a family member don't understand what Islam really means and they hear this term coming out, they want to know from their sons and their daughters, are you going to be part of this holy war? Are you Muslim going to be fighting in America? And people are concerned about that.
How do you explain holy war to Muslims?
Well, firstly, the whole term of jihad, this is one of the things that we caution the Muslims in the international world. We should stop calling national fervor it's Islamic holy war. You know, if I'm having a fight with you, I cannot use the term jihad in my struggle with you, especially if I'm wrong. Also, based on what our prophet has said, he lets us know that jihad first is a personal struggle of the individual against the evils of his own self. Then the next level of jihad is against an enemy that is stopping you from practicing your religion. And the final level of jihad is against the forces of Satan, which is just the normal struggle of good versus evil.
What kind of advice have you found yourself most often giving people now?
Well, the most important thing that I find myself talking with Muslims about is the idea of being better informed. Because this crisis has really shown us the Islamic neglect on the part of many Muslims to know the religion. You know, it's so easy for people who are misinformed to be manipulated. And this is one of the problems we found both here in this country and in the international world with Muslims who are, in many cases, totally misinformed about the real basis of this struggle, are reacting from an emotional side, of an emotional position. And this is one of the strongest things we've been really finding on the part of Muslims. Become better informed.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Certainly.
Imam Muhammad Abdul Aleem is the leader of the West Oak Lane Mosque in Philadelphia. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.